the school being in Fingal there, it had a huge impact on everybody in the area, right? Because I mean, you would have never even seen a plane, right? Planes were still very rare. It's not like there was a, you know, nobody had like private planes and or anything like that. So all of a sudden there would have been planes all over the place. There was a land bombing range just north of Dutton where the service center is on the 401. That was a bombing site. And so, you know, just north of Dutton, they would have seen these planes circling around and all these bombs dropping and you'd hear machine guns and yeah, and people all over the place, right? I mean, people came to Dutton to go to hotels and stuff like that from Fingal, and it was the British Commonwealth, so people came from every nation in the Commonwealth, like Sri Lanka, Australia, New Zealand, you know. There was actually a couple of Maori indigenous people from New Zealand who came and trained at Fingal. And so, again, the chances of somebody from Dutton meeting a Maori native, you know, a gazillion to one, right? Except for that. So, and actually, people, young girls met guys and they ended up getting married. You know, they came back after the war and actually married them. One of the House family, which the Seven Brides for Seven Sisters movie was kind of loosely based on that family. The one girl from that family actually married a guy who was training at Fingal, and he met her at a dance at some hotel there or whatever. Not like a bar, you know, like you'd think of a hotel now, but it was yeah, they held dances and stuff like that. So yeah, it changed everything for a lot of people. Yeah, so.
Was this the first plane that has like gone down in Lake Erie from the bombing and gunnery school? Like I know there was quite a few deaths and probably some crashes, I'm assuming.
Oh, tons and tons of crashes. And there was a lot, like I said, there was quite a few fatalities. But there was 19 men killed specifically from like a air accident. There were other accidents. One guy walked into a prop on the runway and took his head off, things like that. But 19 guys actually died from training accidents. And so, but that was the only one that went in the lake. All the other ones were on land. Actually, one just east of Dutton, on right on Highway 3, on Colonel Talbot or Talbot Line, about 5 or 6 miles outside of Dutton, a plane crashed into a field, and I can't remember. I think the whole crew were killed, like everybody on board, three guys or whatever, they were killed. Yeah, none of them ever went to the lake. So, yeah, you know, there was planes that crashed into woods and things like that, and of course, you know, the planes were, some of the planes were, like the Fairey Battle. It was had a wooden frame, and parts of it were covered in stressed aluminum, but parts of it were covered in canvas and then painted with what they called dope. And it's like a waterproof, airproof paint. And so they covered it in canvas and painted it, and so it could fly, right? And so something like that crashing into the woods, it's gonna just disintegrate. right? Yeah.
So. I'm sure with every plane crash too, there has to be some sort of investigation into how it happened.
Yeah.
Like just with the DC that happened outside of Shedden.
Yeah, Lawrence Station.
Yeah, Lawrence Station. That one, they had a huge investigation and never figure out why. I'm sure like they look at all of the same planes, right? Like the one that went down into Lake Erie, they none of the other same planes probably had problems like that before. So it's quite interesting to try and pinpoint exactly what could have went wrong, especially since it was on fire. It's kind of a an odd situation.
And the same with the one in Lawrence Station. They never really said why. They could never really figure out why it crashed.
Yeah.
Right? There was one theory that it iced up. One theory was that it hit Canadian geese and took it out. If a goose came through the windshield, and the pilot would have lost control. But yeah, that was an American airline.
Mm-hmm.
And there were actually, when it crashed, the United States weren't in World War II yet. It was before Pearl Harbor.
Right.
But on board, there was two United States Army Air Force guys, and they were like colonels and higher up.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that possibility that it was, you know, sabotage, right? But, you know, how did a German or get all the way from Germany, you know, to, it took off from Buffalo and it was heading to Detroit. But I don't think it was sabotage, but a goose could have taken it out.
Heard that they had a bunch of people investigate the grounds and stuff looking for remnants of a goose too, just to try and make sure that, you know, if this is a possibility, let's try and find if, you know, it could be real.
But yeah,
it's kind of,
but yeah, there would. And so when that plane crashed, so there was no fire departments, right? Mm-hmm. But the air school had a fire department.
Right.
And so they contacted the air school, number 4 in Fingal, and the fire department from there rushed there to put out the fire. And guys from the base were commandeered to keep guard because, again, they didn't know why it happened or anything. And it was carrying American mail, like U.S. mail service, and so they didn't want people picking up mail,
right?
And so, you know, people came from United States, and they got guys from Fingal, and they scoured the area picking up mail, and they actually delivered it, that like the mail from the crash actually was delivered. And they all got stamped, recovered from air accident, Lawrence Station, Ontario, Canada. And then they delivered them. So the ones that could be delivered, obviously, some were burnt and whatnot. But yeah, you know, they walking along, finding a letter, you know, stuck in a fence or whatever. And yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah.
Yeah, it must be very difficult to... like investigate plane causes of plane crashes to begin with, because there's so many different possibilities.
Now it's infinitesimal, you know, what could go wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back then it was pretty basic. Planes were, you know, it was just a combustible engine and you know, and there was nothing real high tech about it, you know. So there's only a certain amount of things that could go wrong. And human error is always a possibility, right?
Right.
Even with the plane that went in the lake, you know, they thought, did the pilot, you know, do something wrong? Did he fall asleep? Because they left at like 7 a.m. from Fingal to go out, and they would start doing a circuit to let the drogue out. And then the ferry bow would come by and shoot out the drogue. So they had to go out way before everybody else. Mm-hmm. So they thought, you know, did Gray fall asleep? And right. So that might account for the crash, but it didn't account for the smoke, because there's right. But they ruled that out because, again, he had hundreds and hundreds of hours of flying time. He was a competent pilot, so it's not like he would, you know, wouldn't stay up late or whatever like that, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. What a mystery.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully one day they'll find it. And yeah. You know, and because, there's a couple of guys buried from Fingal in Dutton. And at South Park in St. Thomas, there's two guys from Australia who died in an air crash from Fingal. And so, you know, I've often thought nobody has ever visited those graves from their families, right? Mm-hmm. Like, coming from Australia to Canada in the 40s, like, the only way you could have done it was by ship, right? And it would have taken like a month to do it. So it's unlikely that anybody could do that, you know? And even after the war, I mean, Australia's still a long ways away and very expensive. So I've often thought, you know, did anybody come to this grave, right? Any family member. And so again, you go back to Hilchey, right? That family has nothing except a name inscribed on a wall in Ottawa. So yeah, you know, and all the guys who died overseas, you know, those graveyards are meticulous, looked after. The Canadian War Graves Commission, you know, they pay people, they cut the lawns, they plant flowers, they weed, they keep the stones clean of lichen and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So there are, you know, especially in places like Holland where, you know, they still think Canadians are the greatest people on the face of the earth because we liberated them. And so all the graves at like Grosbeek Cemetery, which is all Canadians, you know, you'd almost think that they cut the lawn with a little pair of scissors because it's just perfect, right?
Very uniform and
So I mean, again, you know, a name on a wall, well, just doesn't cut it. So yeah, I mean, I've been fascinated by it for a long time, and you know, and it was, I'm very blessed that I got to talk to Reg. You know, before, you know, he couldn't explain it, or, you know, and I've interviewed hundreds of World War II vets, and I'm probably, you know, 36 guys from World War I. So I interviewed them all, and that firsthand experience was, something that you can't get out of a book.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You mentioned a bit at the beginning about how a lot of like British soldiers and everything, people from all over were coming here, and you mentioned a bit about the food shortage and how Canada had a lot of it, and they actually supplied so much for World War II to their allies, just wheat, food, everything. A lot of people don't really realize when we talk about war, a lot of the times, of course, like it's all about, you know, the actual battles and stuff, but it's interesting to think of how the other ways in which Canada served,
like absolutely
the farmers and everything. I can't imagine.
So all across Canada there were air schools. And I mean, Fingal graduated 6,500 air gunners and bomb aimers. So that's a, you know, that's one school, 6,500 guys. And so, you know, all across Canada, not in British Columbia because they're mountains and stuff, but, you know, in the prairies in Brandon, Manitoba, And Lethbridge, Alberta, there's, you know. And so in this area, we had Fingal. There was an engineer school in Elmer that is now the Ontario Provincial Police College. There was a Grumlin, and they, it was an air school, but they also assembled planes there, and it's now the London Airport, right? So they just, it was an airport, and they just, you know, it stayed an airport. And yeah, in London they built De Havilland Mosquitoes, which were planes made out of plywood so that they couldn't be detected by radar. And so they were night fighters. And, you know, so they were built there. And what used to be the Ontario Psychiatric Hospital in St. Thomas, it was a technical training school. So everybody who had anything to do with a plane was trained there how to do their trade. So, you know, like an airframe mechanics or like wiring, gauges, everything you can think of that went into putting a plane in the air with men in it, they were taught there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it said that it took six women to put one man in the air. Because a lot of the air crew were women, so yeah, you can imagine that for every one airman, it took six women. So if Fingal graduated 6,500 guys, 6,500 times six is an incredible amount of people, right? And again, those women came from all over Canada and whatnot. And so Fingal ended up becoming a wildlife management area. It was after the war, it became a German prisoner of war camp. Because again, when they captured these Germans, they couldn't put them in England again because they couldn't feed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these German prisoners came to Canada to be held as prisoners of war. And so after they didn't need to train any more airmen in 45, and they closed the school down, and then it became a prisoner of war camp. And those German soldiers, they worked on local farms. They worked on the docks in Port Stanley. And, you know, they didn't really, again, it's a long swim to Germany. So they did, you know, where are you going to go?
Right.
Right. So it didn't matter if they were working out in a field. And actually some of those Germans after the war, they went back to Germany, and then the people that they worked for sponsored them, and they immigrated here and ended up buying farms. And,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Germany was destroyed, right? It was a mess. And so, but you had to go back and be processed. And then if somebody could sponsor you, then you could come over. And then they worked for the same farm, but got paid, and they saved up, and they bought a little farm, and then bought more land. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, you know, that would have never happened if not for, you know, the air school being there. So,
yeah.
And it didn't become, after that, it was a storage area until 1965.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Air Force donated it to the government of Ontario, and it sat for a while. But the runways were all still there, and, local guys, you know, in their hopped up cars would go there and drag race on the things. But in the 70s, people started seeing planes land at night and then take off again. And they were drug dealers because they could fly in and they would go out and just like put flashlights or light pails on fire so that they could see the runway. And they would land, unload, and then take off again and never got caught. So they went in and ripped all the runways up.
Right.
So I don't know if you've ever been there, but the runways are just gravel now, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of remnants of the school. There's, you know, the roadways are still, you can still see pavement. You can see, you know, hydro poles, mm-hmm. Fire hydrants,
yeah,
you know, sewer drains and stuff. All of the quarters where people stayed, they were called mm-hmm. H huts.
Right.
And so, because they looked like an H. And so they divided them. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that each H hut turned into 5 buildings. And so they're scattered all over the place. Pierce Williams camp, the cabins, are all pieces of H huts from Fingal. Number 6 hangar ended up, it was the first arena in West Lorne until it caught on fire, and then they built the one that's there now.
Right.
So yeah, in 65 they auctioned them off, and so you can see houses all around, and yeah, they were part of the school, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Fingal became the second biggest city in Elgin County
mm-hmm.
with the school, right?
Yeah, yeah. Everyone from the area remembers, like, from that time. If you saw someone from the Fingal Bombing and Gunnery School walking along the road, you picked them up, you'd invite them in for dinner, you just,
yeah,
you treat them with the utmost respect, and
yeah, lots of guys, you know, they went houses for dinners, and you know, again, they were kids, and they're first time they're away from home, and when you enlisted, even if there was an air school in your area, they wouldn't have sent you there, because there was that, you were homesick, you could go home, and they didn't want that, so they would send you to another part of Canada, right, just to make sure that, yeah, you didn't, there was no possibility of you, you know, heading home to get, you know, to get your mom's cooking. But yeah, those, you know, they had to have felt sorry for those kids, and and I don't imagine the food was the best at, you know, cooking for thousands of people, and yeah, probably not. But yeah, it's, you're right, it affected everybody, right, in one way or another. Actually, those drogues, they're made out of silk. And sometimes when they were shooting at them, they'd hit the cable and the drogue would go fluttering off, and people would find them, you know, in their woods or in their field, and wedding dresses were made out of them because there was no material, right? So these things, you have this huge 12-foot long, 3-foot diameter tube of silk. You know, women's blouses were made out of them, and you were supposed to turn them in, but there very few people did. And actually, the Crone family, do you know the Crones?
I think so, yeah.
What was his name? Fergus Crone or something like that? His family, they have a drogue. They kept it. And you can see the little holes with the wax colors around it. So they didn't make it into anything, which was rare, but, and it's amazing that they still have it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So again, you know, just another way that it changed the world, right? And you're right, when you learn history in school, it's all about, you know, D-Day, and it's very important,
but of course, I
go to schools a lot, do talks, and I always tell kids that, you know, it wasn't all there, it was here in your backyard too, right? Yeah. So and very few people, you know, especially kids today, they don't have no idea, right? So yeah.
Well, thank you for coming and
no problem.
Sharing Reg Miller's story is very interesting, and I'm glad we're kind of keeping it alive. I had no clue about the crash prior to this, so
right.
And I'm sure a lot of people in the area also don't really remember, because it's, you know, before their time, and
yeah,
yeah,
Yeah, and it's not something that people would talk about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a sad occasion that people tend to want to forget about it.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hopefully, in the near future, we'll be hearing about the Canadian military coming out and marking it a war grave.
Yeah.